A 30-year stagnation in staff size means members of Congress and the people they do have more work to do, if only because of population growth. But that stagnation also affects congressional independence, according to my next guest. Molly Reynolds is a fellow in governance studies at the Brookings Institution, and she joins me now. Molly, good to have you on.
It's great to be here.
Tell us what you were looking at here. This is something you do annually, is take almost a census of Capitol Hill.
Absolutely. So this data that we're going to talk about today is part of an ongoing project that we run here at the Brookings Institution called Vital Statistics on Congress. It's been going for over 30 years, and we look at lots of different indicators about how Congress is performing, what Congress is up to, and one of the things we look at is the size of congressional staff. We look at how many people are employed by members in their personal offices in Washington versus in the states and districts. We also look at how many people work at congressional support agencies like the Congressional Research Service, the Congressional Budget Office, and the Government Accountability Office.
What is the total population of all of these offices?
So right now, on the congressional support staff side, looking at CRS, CBO, and GAO, we're in the neighborhood of about 4,000 employees across those three agencies.
That does not include congressional staff.
No, it does not include the people who work in members' personal offices or for committees. One thing that we've really been focusing on of late is this question of kind of institutional capacity of Congress. So going beyond just the folks who work for members and looking at kind of the people whose job it is to perform important institutional functions for the body.
And the Congressional Research Service and the Congressional Budget Office are there to inform on the issues. How has their staff capacity waxed and waned over the years?
Sure. So those in both cases, there are fewer people working at those agencies than there once were. And I think that's really important because, as you point out, the fewer people Congress has doing some of these important functions for it, the harder it is for members to do their jobs well.
And they turn to other sources of information you're reporting
absolutely.
For
issues. Absolutely. So if we think about sort of what the job of things like CRS and CBO is, it's to provide different kinds of, but generally high-quality, impartial analysis to members. And if the size of those agencies is smaller, they're doing the absolute best they can with the resources and the staff that Congress provides for them. But if they don't have all of the resources they need to be as effective as they can be, there's a real incentive for members to turn outside the institution for other sources of information.
And what about the Government Accountability Office? That's one that you state has shrunk almost in half over the past 30 years.
Right. And their job is really to help Congress perform its oversight functions, to sort of figure out what's going on in parts of the executive branch. And again, the fewer people they have, the fewer resources they have, the much harder it is for them to do that work well. And it's important to sort of think about these all as parts of a bigger picture. So if we think about Congress having less information to make good decisions as it's drafting bills, that might lead to an incentive to give more power to sort of fill in the blanks on legislation to the executive branch. But then at the same time, if Congress doesn't have all of the resources it needs to do effective oversight, it can't keep an eye on the jobs and the responsibilities that it's given to the executive branch, in part because it doesn't necessarily have all the resources it needs to do a great job writing legislation on the front end.
Do you think that might give rise to maybe not so high quality legislation? And I'm thinking of, say, the Dodd-Frank bill, which something happened in the economy, something very specific, and yet it ended up with a bill that is vast and gigantic and way beyond the scope of what was eventually identified as the problem for that financial crisis. And frankly, you know, hearing some of the members on both sides, it's not clear that they understand finance very well.
So there are lots of challenges that confront Congress when it's trying to write good quality legislation in the current environment. So in addition to these kinds of staff and capacity challenges we're talking about today, there's also an incentive to write these sort of big pieces of legislation like Dodd-Frank, like big omnibus spending bills, because in a very polarized Congress, it's attractive to only have to build one coalition, to sort of only need to get to get one big vote as opposed to having lots of separate votes on lots of different bills. So that's another kind of driver of some of what we're seeing. But at the same time, I do think that as Congress has fewer resources and less internal capacity to make good decisions, it does turn to different outside groups and resources, which can affect the legislative process.
We're speaking with Molly Reynolds. She's a fellow in governance studies at the Brookings Institution. Where they're getting their information then tends to be highly biased on one side of an issue or another.
Can be. I don't want to say that there aren't good, high quality sources of information outside of the chamber as well. There's lots of good, nonpartisan, non-ideological research that gets done that Congress can use as it needs to make decisions. But again, the less information that Congress is producing internally and the less capacity it has to do that, the more likely they are to have to turn to other outside sources of information.
And getting back to groups like the Congressional Budget Office, do you think that the shrinking staff and the increased demands might give rise to questions about the quality of the work that they put out?
So for all three of the congressional support agencies that we look at here, CRS, CBO, and GAO, they're populated by really wonderful civil servants who do really great work with the resources that they have available to them. And they, despite declining staff levels, still play a really important and really effective and impartial role in the legislative process. The challenge is that the more that they're asked to do with fewer and fewer resources, the harder it is for the entire institution to run on anything that looks like an efficient and effective timetable.
Because if you're running transactional systems that used to be done on paper, then computers can take most of the people and the paperwork out of a thing like that. But we're not talking about that kind of process. We're talking about intellectual analysis.
Absolutely. I mean, these are important jobs that that people, experts have to do and do well, even when they have fewer resources available to them. And so it's really a question of how can we help the people that we have do an even better job than they're already doing in order to make Congress as an institution function better in our separation of powers system.
Because if you talk to some of the old-time retirees from these agencies, maybe that's just the human condition, they always complain, it was way better back when I was there and we had all these staff members and much more detailed analysis than they can do nowadays.
Right. And so the data that we're talking about today speaks to some of that sort of declining staff levels. At the same time, it's also important to think about the ways in which the policy process and the policy questions that Congress is being asked to take up have gotten more complicated over time. And so the kind of information that they need in order to do their jobs well is just simply more complicated and more in-depth than they did in the past, which makes our concerns about declining staff levels sort of elevates them as well.
How did it get to this point? Because in the case of the civil service in the executive branch, well, Congress controls those budgets. And over the past 30 years, you know, there's been some overall drifting down, I guess maybe it stepped down during the Clinton administration and has been steady since. But Congress also controls its own budget. So is there maybe an overzealousness in trying to show fiscal rectitude over these years that has caused the situation?
Yeah, so it's certainly the case that for some members of Congress, making cuts to Congress's own budget is a popular move. Members like to be able to say that they're spending less on themselves. In the context of individual congressional offices, which again is a little outside of the data that we're talking about today, but you'll see members pride themselves on not spending all of the allowance that they get for their individual staff. So some of it is that. Another important development to note is that in 1995, when Republicans took control of the House of Representatives after a very long time as the minority party, one thing they did was eliminate the Office of Technology Assessment, which is a whole other separate congressional support agency that's focused specifically on science and technology issues. And so that, when we talk about the decline over time, that's another piece of the story.
And as you say, you didn't really look at the staff of the members themselves, but you do note that each one represents an average of 200,000 more people than they did 30 years ago.
Absolutely.
And on the Senate side, it's 1.6 million.
Right. And this is another trend like the one that I was mentioning in terms of the change in the complexity of the policy environment that, again, as members have more constituents, particularly on sort of the constituent services front, that's just more work that fewer people are being asked to do.
So if Mrs. Jones has a question about her late husband's VA situation, it's harder for her to get that information out of Congress as a last resort, out of her member,
right,
than it might have been.
So members have to make this choice when they have a fixed amount of resources to hire their own staff. Do they want, how much of that staff do they want to devote towards DC-based staff who are policy-focused, who can help them get the information they need to make decisions about what bills to work on, how to vote on the legislation that comes up on the floor? Or do they want to invest in having district or state-based staff that can help people like Mrs. Jones and her VA pension problem, that sort of thing, help constituents solve those issues?
Is there a way out of this? Is it to increase the budgets and bite the bullet, or is it to just do less legislating?
So I think that there's definitely room for improvement in terms of hiring more staff and trying to rebuild some of this lost institutional capacity in some of these congressional support agencies, I think would be helpful to Congress as it continues to face the big legislative challenges facing the country.
Molly Reynolds is a fellow in governance studies at the Brookings Institution. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Find a link to the latest edition of Vital Statistics on Congress and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.